Chapter 13, Identifying Loans and Finding Sources of Money. Money for me has only one sound, liberty. Gabrielle Chanel. If you don't have any money, that doesn't mean you can't get started investing in real estate. In this chapter, I show you how to find cash from a variety of sources, so you can choose the one that's best for you. When you think about it, buying real estate is no different than buying anything else. If you're going to buy a new TV, for example, you need money. You can pay for it in cash, or you can buy it on credit, essentially borrowing the credit card company's money to pay for your purchases. That's the same process you can use to buy real estate. Because real estate prices can be several hundred thousand dollars or more, almost no one buys real estate with their own money. Instead, they use loans, which they can get from a variety of sources, such as banks, private lenders, and even government agencies. With a little creativity, it's possible to buy real estate with no money down, just like you do when you buy something using a credit card. Of course, eventually you have to pay back the lender, such as the credit card company. Real estate is the same, except with bigger numbers and the chance to resell your purchase for an enormous profit. You can buy property with little or no money of your own. Begin paying back that money you borrowed, plus interest, over a fixed period of time. Sell the property for a profit. Use the profit to pay back the lender, and still have money left for yourself. To make sure you pay back the money you borrowed, lenders use a legal document called a mortgage in some states, or a deed of trust in other states. Mortgages and deeds of trust serve the same purpose, making sure the lender either gets paid or has the right to seize your property if you fail to pay them back, but have a few important differences. What is a mortgage? Although we commonly refer to loans as mortgages, and I do as well in this book because it is common jargon, technically a mortgage is not a loan. A mortgage is a security document that protects the lender's interests in your property because he has lent you money. A mortgage is an agreement between you as the borrower, the mortgagor, and a lender, the mortgagee. The mortgage creates a lien on the property, which acts as collateral for the money you borrowed. The lien is recorded in public records, probably at your county courthouse. Until you pay back all the money borrowed, you cannot transfer ownership of your property to anyone else, unless your mortgage specifically gives you that right, which is rare. If you sell the property, you use the money first to pay back the remaining amount you borrowed. The rest of the money is yours to keep as profit. Then the new owner must take out a new mortgage on the property. If you fail to pay back the lender, a mortgage gives the lender the right to sell the property to pay your debt. This sales process is called a foreclosure. Foreclosures must usually go through the court system. This type of foreclosure is called a judicial foreclosure. What is a deed of trust? A deed of trust is a special kind of deed recorded in public records, such as in your county courthouse, where it tells everyone that a lien is on your property. Unlike a mortgage, a deed of trust involves three parties: you as the borrower, the trustor, the lender, the beneficiary, and a neutral third party, the trustee, who holds temporary but not full title on your property until the lien is paid. When you pay your loan in full, the deed of trust is canceled. If you do not fulfill your payment or contractual obligations, the trustee has the power to foreclose your property without going through the court system, making it easier and quicker than foreclosing on a mortgage. Where to borrow money? Most people borrow money from a bank, but you can borrow money in many ways, such as from institutional lenders, mortgage brokers, government agencies, private lenders. If some of these terms sound unfamiliar, don't worry. I'll explain them all soon. I just want you to realize that you have a variety of sources where you can get money to buy real estate. After you know how to borrow money from one or more lenders, you can mix and match your options to fit each deal. Institutional lenders. Institutional lenders are banks, credit unions, savings and loans, mortgage brokers, mortgage bankers, and REITs, real estate investment trusts. When most people buy real estate, they typically turn to an institutional lender first. For years, institutional lenders offered relatively few choices in borrowing money. But during the housing boom that flooded the market with buyers, lenders had to compete by offering more flexible loans. Rather than require a down payment, institutional lenders started offering up to 107% financing loans, interest-only loans, and even 50-year amortization, which means you can take 50 years to pay back your loan, which reduces your monthly payments. Institutional lenders usually base their decisions on the four C's of lending. Credit. Does your credit history show that you pay your financial obligations in a timely manner? What is your credit score? I've had things pop up on my credit report that were wrong and lowered my credit rating. To correct this problem, I either supplied proof of payment or proved that the report was wrong. So get a copy of your credit report and make sure it's correct. We talked about this in an earlier chapter, and I repeat it here because no matter what your credit score, you can always improve it. Collateral. Does the property you are offering for security have enough value to offset the risk? This is usually determined by an appraisal. Capacity. Is your income or the income from the investment adequate to offset their debt-to-income DTI ratio? Different types of loans have different ratios. For instance, for conventional home loans with traditional lenders, your monthly PITI, principal, interest, taxes, insurance, usually cannot exceed 26 to 28% of your gross monthly income. Compensating factors. What other things can offset the lender's risk? Will the property generate income from rents? Do you have a strong employment history, residual income, assets, high net worth, or a previous history of success in investing? Loans from institutional lenders can vary dramatically. Basically, the more risk a lender takes, the more they expect in return. Unlike some old-school thinking, if a property has the potential to produce significant income, I lean towards getting a loan with a high interest rate rather than shy away from a loan altogether. It's my practice to do whatever it takes to buy property that I think is a good deal, then let an opportunity slip away by not getting a loan. Even better, it's possible to take out a loan at a high interest rate and then refinance later at a lower interest rate. Because institutional lenders can often take time to evaluate a loan, many people pre-qualify for loans. This means that they show the lender proof and history of employment, income records, assets, debts, and so on. Based on this information along with your credit rating, an institutional lender can pre-qualify you for loans up to a certain amount. After you pre-qualify for a loan, you'll be able to borrow the money you need in a hurry if a real estate opportunity suddenly pops up. Just remember that there is a big difference between pre-approved and pre-qualified. In a pre-qualification, the lender looks at your income and credit history but does not verify it. A pre-qualification gives you an idea of how much you can borrow, but no funds will be disbursed until the complete loan file has been submitted to the underwriting department of the lender and signed off by an underwriter. To get pre-approved, you may need to wait an additional 3 to 6 weeks, depending on how busy the lenders are. Becoming pre-approved gives you the ability to shop like a cash buyer. The only documentation required by the lender after pre-approval is the purchase contract, appraisal, and title report. Those three items can be generated within a couple of days, especially if you've established a relationship with your appraiser, title agent, and real estate broker. After you have decided on a property, you can close within a week if you are pre-approved for a loan. To become pre-qualified or pre-approved for a traditional loan, you need to provide the following. 2 most recent years of W-2s, showing continuous employment in the same or related line of work. Last 30 days of pay stubs. They won't accept handwritten pay stubs. Last 3 months of bank statements for checking and savings, all pages, front and back. Most recent statements from all other asset accounts, CDs, 401ks, retirement, Social Security. Recent credit report. Generally, the lending institution will run your credit report. Purchase contract on the property you are attempting to buy. Recent appraisal on the property you are purchasing. Usually, the lender will arrange for this to be supplied. Divorce decrees, including division of assets, if applicable. Bankruptcy papers, if applicable. If you are self-employed, you need to provide additional information to the lender as follows. Last 2 years' tax returns. Business owners who write off everything and show little or no taxable income can't use institutional lenders. Profit and loss statement and balance sheet for 2 full years. Business license or letter from a CPA indicating 2 years' business history. Most recent business checking and savings statements, all pages. Mortgage brokers. You can borrow money directly from an institutional lender, such as your own bank, or you can find a lender through a mortgage broker. A mortgage broker works with several lenders to find the best loan for you. If one lender turns you down, the mortgage broker can submit your loan application to another lender who may approve you. One reason a bank may turn you down for a loan is because of something known as seasoning. Seasoning means the bank requires that you hold a piece of property for a certain period of time, such as 6 months or a year, before they'll let you refinance it. In Chapter 4, I told you about a foreclosure I purchased for less than $60,000, immediately turned around and refinanced. After closing costs, I wound up with $188,000. I also mentioned that I had to find a bank that did not worry about seasoning. Fortunately, using a good mortgage broker allowed me to get over that hurdle. To get this property, I needed to close fast, and there was no time for a loan. So I paid cash and immediately put in an application to my mortgage broker to get a loan on the house. I paid less than $60,000 for the property, but it was appraised for $220,000. I wanted to borrow 90% of the appraised value so I could pay myself back and have money to rehab the property and additional money to invest in other properties. However, most banks turned me down because they considered my loan a refinancing because I already owned the property after paying cash for it, and they wouldn't approve a loan because the property wasn't seasoned. Seasoning is just one criterion a bank may have. Banks generally want proof that you could pay the cost of the house for 6 months or a year before giving you more money. Most banks have this as part of their criteria, but not all. I could have applied for a loan from multiple banks myself, but I let the mortgage broker find me a bank that would loan me money instead. Another advantage is that with a mortgage broker, he or she will run your credit once and use that to submit to many banks. If you went to different banks yourself, each bank would run your credit, and that can lower your score. Each time someone requests your credit report, it is a negative ding on your overall credit score. The number of times someone requests your credit report is one of the determining factors credit bureaus use to calculate your current credit score. Even though getting approved for the loan required paying a higher interest rate because the property wasn't seasoned, I found that the rents from the property would still cover the mortgage. Even with my credit score heading towards 800 and a great income, if a bank has a policy they can't do a certain loan, they can't do it. So having the ability to access a multitude of banks and lending institutions through a mortgage broker may be a smart move when doing a non-traditional real estate transaction. When considering a mortgage broker, ask how long the mortgage broker has been in business and how many banks he or she works with. Most importantly, find out how much the mortgage broker charges for application and origination fees. Application and origination fees, also called points, are a percentage of the entire loan amount that is paid to the bank or the mortgage broker at closing. 1 point equals 1% of the total loan. Most mortgage brokers charge from 0.5% to 3%, so it is important to ask what they charge. Some mortgage brokers also receive additional money from the bank that is lending the money, which is called the back end. Don't be afraid to ask mortgage brokers how they make money, because they are required by law to disclose that to you. You want to pay a mortgage broker for his or her services, but you want to keep your expenses to a minimum. Government agencies. The government wants people to become homeowners, so they have many city, state, and federal agencies designed to help people buy their own home. Two government agencies that help home buyers are the Veterans Administration and the Federal Housing Administration. The Veterans Administration, VA, helps eligible veterans get loans through a bank by guaranteeing a portion of the loan. The VA guarantee effectively replaces the down payment, typically 20% of the property price, that the lender normally requires before approving a conventional loan. This means eligible veterans can obtain up to 100% financing to purchase a home at a competitive interest rate normally reserved for conventional loans that require a down payment. The Federal Housing Administration, FHA, allows you to buy a house with as little as 3% down, instead of the typical 10% or 20% required to secure a conventional loan. The FHA doesn't make home loans, it insures them. If a home buyer defaults, the lender still gets paid from the FHA insurance fund. To qualify for the FHA program, you need a good credit history and sufficient income. Your monthly housing costs should not exceed 29% of your gross monthly income. Total housing costs include the mortgage as well as principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, known as PITI. Example, maximum PITI. Monthly income times 0.29 equals maximum PITI. For a monthly income of $3,000, that means $3,000 times 0.29 equals $870 maximum PITI. Your total monthly costs, adding PITI and long-term debt, should be no more than 41% of your gross monthly income. Long-term debt includes such things as car loans and credit card balances. Example, maximum monthly costs. Monthly income times 0.41 equals maximum monthly costs. For a monthly income of $3,000, that means $3,000 times 0.41 equals $1,230. $1,230 total minus $870 PITI equals $360 allowed for monthly long-term debt. The ratios for an FHA loan are more lenient than for a typical conventional loan. For conventional home loans, PITI expense cannot usually exceed 26 to 28% of your gross monthly income, and total expense should be no more than 33 to 36%. To learn more about FHA loans, go to my website at www.deangraziosi.com and click the link for FHA loans. Private lenders. Many people think that a bank is the only place where they can get a loan, but you can borrow money from anyone. Private lenders can be individuals or groups that loan money to fund what they think will be profitable investments, such as real estate. Private lenders typically advertise in daily newspapers, and most have relationships with realtors, mortgage brokers, and bankers to handle their paperwork requirements and to bring them prospective clients. In exchange for risking their money, private investors typically charge a higher interest rate than banks and may also request a portion of the profits. Keep in mind that many private lenders are also real estate investors, which means they could make a good partner for the right project. Some of my most successful students started out lending money to other real estate investors. When you borrow money from a private lender, you typically use a legal document called a promissory note, often called just a note. Basically, a promissory note is a contract outlining the promise by one party, the maker, to pay a sum of money to the other, the payee. The terms of the note typically include the principal, the amount owed, the interest rate, the maturity date, when the note will be paid off, and any collateral used to secure the loan. Collateral can be anything of value, such as a car, jewelry, or a rare coin collection. If the maker defaults on payments, the payee can take possession of the collateral and sell it to recover the money owed. Typically, the value of the collateral is greater than the money owed on the promissory note. Remember that private lenders will analyze, actually overanalyze, your deal because they are the ones at risk. Because you are using them rather than the bank, they worry that there could be a problem somewhere. Maybe you have bad credit or the property has problems. They will typically do their own analysis, crunch their own numbers, check the title, order an appraisal, and so on. If they don't find any problems and they lend you the money, that could be a good indication that you have found a great deal. Conventional financing techniques. The number of conventional and non-conventional financing techniques is virtually unlimited. But I want to begin this section by explaining some of the better-known conventional lending programs available through Fannie Mae, Federal National Mortgage Association, or FNMA, and Freddie Mac, Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation, or FHLMC. The federal government set up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to purchase mortgages made by banks, mortgage banking companies, and mortgage brokers. They are not insurance companies like FHA or VA. They are the source of additional money for lenders to loan to their customers. In the conventional lending business, they are considered the voice of authority and have set down a list of rules or lender guidelines. If lenders want to sell their mortgages to these two institutions, they must follow these guidelines. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are commonly known as the secondary market. When a lender bundles up their loans and sells them into the secondary market, they sell the loans at a discount. When loan portfolios, literally thousands of mortgages, are accepted by either institution, they send money back to the originating source, less the discount they charge, so the lenders can keep loaning money to the public in the form of new mortgages. Now, let's talk a little about some of the most commonly used terms you'll see when considering different types of loans. First, there's the principal, which is the total amount of money you're borrowing. So if you want to buy property that costs $275,000, you would take out a loan where the principal of the loan would be $275,000. If you put a down payment such as $27,500 on the property, the principal of the loan would be $247,500. Second, when lenders loan money, they expect to be paid back within a certain time, such as 15 or 30 years, although the specific time frame can be negotiated. Third, to make it profitable to loan money, banks and other lenders charge interest. So when taking out a loan to buy property, you need to consider the following: principal, time frame to pay back the loan, interest rate of the loan. The more you borrow, the higher your monthly payments will be. The longer the time frame, the lower your monthly payments. The higher the interest rate, the higher your monthly payments. By adjusting these three factors, principal, time frame, and interest rate, you can adjust your monthly payments to make them affordable. One way to lower your interest rate is to live in your investment property. Generally, lenders offer a lower interest rate if you're buying a property as your residence than if you're buying property as an investment. The theory is that you're more likely to pay a loan for your own house, so you'll be a lower risk of defaulting on your loan. You can legally get around this rule by being innovative and creative, but it does require some potential inconvenience on your part because you will have to live in the property you are buying for at least a short period of time. If you already own a home, you'll have to turn it into an investment property by renting it out. In this way, you can legally get a lower interest rate while investing at the same time. For this to work, you should be increasing the purchase price of each new property because lenders probably will not believe that you are moving from a higher-priced property into a lower-priced property. Adjustable rate versus fixed-rate mortgages. In a traditional loan, you borrow a specific amount of money that you can pay back within 15 or 30 years at a fixed interest rate that never changes throughout the life of the loan. Adjustable rate mortgages, also known as ARMs, were created to reduce the monthly payment obligation of the borrower so that your monthly payment is lower than a fully amortized traditional loan. ARMs have lower interest rates than traditional fixed-rate loans. ARMs usually have interest rates that are fixed for a shorter term, such as 3 years or 5 years. During this 3-year period, for example, the loan payment is interest-only for a predetermined period of the loan, and no principal is amortized in the payment. Then the principal portion of the monthly payment will kick in or start amortizing later as defined in the loan documents. ARMs have predetermined minimum and maximum interest rates, known as a cap and a floor, that state the highest and lowest rates that the rates might adjust to over the life of that loan. These ARMs usually have a built-in periodic adjustment, collars, where the interest rate will not adjust more than a certain amount, such as 2% annually, or as defined in the loan. In the most recent 3-year period where property values increased rapidly, homebuyers turned to ARMs as a preferred method of financing their investments to keep their monthly payments lower, especially if they didn't plan on holding on to their property for very long. The most common adjustable rate mortgages adjust the interest rate periodically in one of 3 ways. Monthly adjustments. The interest rate is recalculated monthly. 6-month adjustments. The interest rate adjusts every 6 months. 1-to-1, 3-to-1, 5-to-1, 7-to-1, and 10-to-1 adjustments. The interest rate remains fixed for a certain number of years and then adjusts annually thereafter. For example, a 5-to-1 adjustment means the interest rate remains fixed for 5 years and then adjusts annually after the 5th year. Although adjustable rate mortgages can cost you more money than a fixed rate loan when interest rates change, ARMs can make sense if you're going to own property for less than 5 years. So it's possible to get an ARM at a lower interest rate than a fixed rate loan, buy property, improve it, and then sell it less than 5 years later at a profit. Then you pay back the money you borrowed through the ARM and keep the extra money as profit. In this way, you sell the property before the next interest rate increase or decrease could affect you. Private mortgage insurance. Private mortgage insurance, or PMI, is basically an insurance policy that you pay as part of your monthly mortgage payment. PMI ensures the lender that if they have to foreclose on the property due to non-payment of the loan, they will receive the remainder of their loan from the insurance company. Basically, PMI protects the lender but costs you extra money. That's why most investors try to avoid PMI. Generally, the higher your initial down payment, the less likely the lender will require you to pay for PMI because you'll have a financial stake in making payments. Otherwise, you'll lose your initial down payment as well. Prepayment penalty. When a lender makes a loan to someone, they expect to receive payments for a specified period of time. This amount is known as the yield. To ensure that they receive the yield they expect, many lenders state that if the borrower pays off the loan earlier than expected, they have to pay a prepayment penalty, which can be as much as 6 months to 1 year's worth of interest. If you are planning on keeping your property for an extended period of time, you probably don't need to worry about the prepayment penalty because you won't want to pay off your loan anyway. One advantage of a prepayment penalty is that if you accept it as a condition for the loan, you can often negotiate a lower interest rate with the lender. However, if you're planning to buy property, fix it up, and resell it later, you could be hit with a prepayment penalty when you sell the property and pay back the original loan. New conventional mortgages. Many people just getting started in real estate have no idea what's available through institutional lenders or how flexible some of those lenders have become with their lending programs. My goal in this section is to give you an idea of some of those creative financing programs. With a competitive marketplace, most of these new conventional mortgages allow minimal or no money down purchases, enabling beginning investors a chance to get into the market. As long as you have a decent credit history, you should qualify for most of these loan programs. Remember, always raise your credit score by paying off your debt. 103 to 107% new first mortgage. Rather than finance 100% of the purchase price, lenders may offer you 100% financing plus an additional 3 to 7%, which you can use to pay off debts, make improvements to the property, or spend any way you like. The loan period is typically for 30 years, with no private mortgage insurance and an adjustable rate mortgage where the interest rate remains fixed for 2 or 3 years before adjusting annually afterwards. Here are the exact numbers for a home I recently purchased, knowing I would need to do some minor repairs before I could sell it again. Instead of using any of my own money, I went with a 106% loan. The sale price of the house was $455,000. But because I got a 106% loan, I borrowed $482,850. The remaining balance was $27,850, 1.5 points to the mortgage company, minus $7,230, school taxes until the end of the year, minus $8,005, mortgage tax of 0.5%, minus $2,414, title insurance, minus $3,039, attorney fees, minus $1,000, administration and miscellaneous fees, minus $1,850, insurance, minus $1,250, money left over, plus $3,062. Now, as crazy as those expenses seem, they're typical of the closing costs necessary for any real estate purchase, although costs can vary from state to state. Although I paid an extra 0.5% origination fee to get a 106% loan from the lender, the rest of those fees would be due even with a traditional loan. But in this case, by doing my homework and knowing what the home was worth, I was confident doing the deal this way and walking away with money in my pocket. For my loan, I paid an interest rate that was probably 1.5% higher than a traditional loan. But a few months of payments with higher interest was not significant enough to tie up my own money. After fixing up this house, I have it under contract. I put about $10,000 into the house, and after paying all the fees, such as taxes and insurance, expenses, and realtor's commissions, I should make around $60,000 profit. With this type of 106% loan, I was able to make that kind of money without using a penny of my own money to purchase the place. 80-20 new first and second mortgages. LTV, or loan to value, is the bank's term for letting you know how much of the value of the home they will lend you. Many lenders allow for 100% financing for a new first mortgage that does not exceed 80% LTV, and a new second mortgage that does not exceed 20% of the total LTV. You can use these programs to avoid paying private mortgage insurance, PMI, In this case, they would be lending you 100% of the value of the home. The 80-20 mortgage is basically two different loans, one for 80% of the appraised value of the home, and a second mortgage for 20% of the value of the home, or asking price, whichever is lower. Together, this makes up 100% of the sale price. If you don't have any money for closing costs, you can ask the seller to give you a seller's concession for the amount of the closing costs. If your costs for title insurance, loan discount fees, taxes, and so on are $2,000, for example, ask the seller to pay that out of the money he or she will receive from the sale. 80-15-5, new first and second mortgage with 5% borrower contribution. The 80-15-5 loan is a variation of the 80-20 mortgage. The borrower comes up with 5% towards the purchase price, and the lender gives a first mortgage that does not exceed 80% LTV and a second mortgage for the remaining 15% of the LTV. This program is also used to avoid PMI. You can still ask the seller to help with closing costs. So, on a $100,000 purchase, you would need $5,000 as a down payment. In the next option, the 80-10-10 mortgage, you would have to come up with $10,000 for a down payment. 80-10-10 new first mortgage. The 80-10-10 loan is another variation of the previous two programs. In this one, the borrower comes up with a 10% down payment of the purchase price, and the lender gives a new first mortgage that does not exceed 80% LTV and a new second mortgage for 10% LTV. The less risk the lender is asked to take, the better the interest rate on both the first and second mortgages. Mortgage renovation loan. A few lenders offer mortgage renovation loans, which not only loan you money to buy property, but also provide you with the funds to renovate the property. These programs have specific guidelines as to LTV, up to 95% with great credit. The renovation period, usually up to 6 months after closing to complete the work, and the use of licensed contractors to perform the work. It pays to have good credit. If you have excellent credit, the world is your oyster. Lenders perceive a person with an excellent credit history as their lowest risk because of the borrower's ability to pay everything on or before its due date. Borrowers with credit scores exceeding 700 sometimes have to provide little or no income documentation to secure a loan. A couple of examples follow. Stated income mortgage. All creditworthy borrowers have to do with a stated income loan is state their income without proving where it comes from. This is probably the most popular loan for self-employed people. Most lender guidelines limit borrowers to 90% LTV for purchases with no income documentation. A mortgage broker can help you through the process of getting the documents you need for this type of loan. I use a stated income loan whenever I know that I'm going to fix and flip a property quickly. With a stated income loan, you may pay a little higher interest rate each month, but there is significantly less paperwork and time involved in getting the loan. Stated income, stated assets mortgage. With the stated income, stated assets loan, the creditworthy borrower has the freedom to simply state their income and indicate how much they have in the bank. According to the guidelines, you do not have to prove your assets. The interest rates on these programs are a little higher, but if it makes the transaction work, go for it. No income, no assets mortgage. A no income, no assets, NINA loan, is the granddaddy of them all, because if your credit score is high enough and the LTV is low enough, you don't have to tell the lender how much you make or how much you have in the bank. These rates are even higher than the stated income and stated income, stated asset loans. But again, if it works for you and allows you to qualify and close the loan, that's the main thing. Conclusion. Can you see how many lending options are available? With so many different types of loans available, lenders can tailor the best loan for your needs. If one lender turns you down, you can choose from plenty more. In fact, the job performance of loan officers is based on the number and quality of loans they make, so they have an incentive to loan people money. More money is available now than ever before. As long as you have a good or even average credit rating, you should be able to use one or more of the loans described in this chapter to finance your next deal. Because your credit rating determines the number and type of loans you can get, I strongly recommend that you watch your credit score, regularly review your credit report, and clear up any errors. Think of all the interest you will save if you receive better or even preferential interest rates that banks make available to clients with excellent credit. Manage your credit score aggressively. Develop relationships with lenders. Explore the options with those lenders. And establish your credit options before you purchase a property. If you develop relationships with different lenders and understand the variety of loans you can use, you'll be able to pounce on the next real estate opportunity you see and walk away with a hefty profit.